Today's guest is Julie May, the founder of July Health, a telehealth platform dedicated to improving care for women with PCOS. A registered dietitian and a fellow PCOSer, Julie has built a business that combines mental health support with innovative care for women's hormonal health. Her mission is to disrupt outdated healthcare models and provide accessible, science-backed care to women across Canada.
Julie, thank you so much for being here. I want to start with your personal story. So I know that you came from an immigrant household that pushed you to pursue a very stable career, but you've taken a big risk on yourself to start July Health. So how did you make the decision to break away from the traditional career path and go your own route?
Yeah, thank you for having me. And I want to start with maybe a little bit of a background on that immigrant story, but I'm sure it relates to many women in general. I was raised either you're going to be a doctor or a lawyer, you're going to go to school, have that stable career, have a family. So I went the healthcare route, but since I was a little kid, I think I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. The signs were there, you know, the lemonade stands. I was always doing something on the side. So I sneakily pursued a stable healthcare career that also allowed for potential entrepreneurship in the future. Very sneaky. I am a registered dietitian, and most dietitians do work in hospital settings, but there is the option of also having your own clinic, having your own practice. So it wasn't easy. I worked in healthcare for 4 years before I finally went and did my own thing. I think the hardest part about having an immigrant upbringing is just the unlearning. So for me, it was being very risk intolerant because of just, I think, fear from maybe our parents projecting that onto us. The risk of doing something on your own and having unstable income led me to working in a 9-to-5 for a really long time. Secondly, just the money scarcity mindset aspect, where although the chances of you maybe getting paid higher in entrepreneurship is there, just having a stable income is like a preferred thing. And it's really hard, I think, to unlearn just like limiting beliefs around money in general. And then I'm an only child, so I am a major people pleaser. And I always wanted to feel like I was doing everything that was expected of me, going to school, getting that stable career. And for me to just leave all of that to pursue entrepreneurship was super scary. I didn't want to disappoint my parents. And so this is all of the things that I had to unlearn before I finally broke away and did my own thing, but it was hard.
I'd love to go back to that point of financial stability and starting your own thing as well. Were there any boxes that you wanted to check before becoming an entrepreneur?
Yes, absolutely. Looking back, I wish I had left a lot earlier, but for my own feeling of security, I needed to feel like I was consistently earning enough money at least to cover my monthly expenses. So for me, with just the expensive rent in Toronto and my cost of living, that number for me was 3 to 4K a month. I needed to make sure that I was consistently making around that amount monthly several months before I felt comfortable leaving. And I ended up reaching that number and still continued working a 9-to-5 for another year before I finally left.
Yeah, I love that. I always recommend when people come to me wanting to start their entrepreneurial journey to start it as a side hustle and then transition when you do know that it's off the ground to that degree. So yeah, I love that mindset. And as well, you mentioned in a previous conversation that you had several businesses before starting July Health. So what did those experiences teach you and how did they shape your journey?
Yes. Yeah. I was mentioning that since I was a little kid, I always saw the signs of an entrepreneur. For example, my first legitimate business was when I was 15 or 16. I was selling stickers on Etsy and then afterwards pivoted to selling wall art. I had a Shopify drop shipping website at one point. Most recently, I was doing TikTok influencing. I then, over the pandemic, started a remote job board for healthcare workers who were burnt out and wanted to leave. In less than 2 years, I ended up building that all the way up to an email list of 20,000 people making recurring revenue. And I actually sold it last year before pursuing July Health. But in general, with that journey of having multiple businesses, I like to compare it to dating, where as like a founder, I think you're lucky if your first business is the one. So similar to dating, like if you end up with your high school sweetheart, I'm jealous. But I needed to, I think, fail many times. And many, I think, founders also share this type of journey where I think you need to have multiple dating experiences, multiple business experiences before you find the right one. And the biggest lesson for me was two things. On the topic of limiting beliefs, I think just being able to think big, think in scale is something that like definitely did not happen in business one. Business one, I was shipping and mailing things from my bedroom, totally unscalable sticker business. And I also find just looking at other young entrepreneurs that your first couple of businesses are often quite local. Usually you're targeting maybe other high school students, other university students, because that's just the scale that you're exposed to. But as I failed and started entering maybe newer businesses, I've been able to think about what scalability actually means and have been able to think bigger, because it's hard on my end with my experiences just to see people who maybe persist with their very first business idea. I think so many founders have the potential to grow big things, but they're just like tied to a bad idea or an idea that just doesn't scale. So I am a big promoter of dating multiple, explore multiple businesses before you find that one. And then the other lesson that I learned is just being scrappy. I never went to business school. I don't have a lot of capital up front. I've gotten really good at just starting businesses that require no startup cost and just figuring it out along the way, being capital efficient. So I don't regret having gone through 7 businesses before July Health.
Yeah, I love that. And I totally agree too. I think that the more businesses you have, the more scrappy you actually become. I think that sometimes when it's your first business, you feel like it's so tied to your identity that you want to make it so perfect before you put it out there. And I feel like as you go through this cycle of starting more businesses, you become more comfortable putting it out there sooner than you feel like it's really perfect and ready. So yeah, and I love that dating analogy too. It's so true. And then as well, getting into the topic of PCOS. So I know that it's something that so many women struggle with, including myself, but there's often little education and effective care surrounding it. So how did your personal experience having PCOS shape the creation of July Health?
Yeah, so I find when I hear other people's PCOS stories or people who have PCOS businesses or like creators on the internet, I often find the story is along the lines of, I went through this major health journey, so then I started this business or got this certification so that I can help you do the same. My journey was actually backwards. I started my career as a dietitian in the field of endocrinology, so hormones. I did diabetes, PCOS, obesity. I actually had no idea I had PCOS myself until 3 years into my career. So
oh, interesting.
I have an interesting perspective seeing it from both ends. So I firsthand only would see maybe the types of PCOS that were also associated with diabetes and obesity, because I guess those were the types of PCOS that were coming across my clinic. And I think that's what led to it taking so long for me to finally get a diagnosis, because I guess with limited research and awareness, you don't realize that there's actually many different types of PCOS and it comes in many different bodies, shapes and sizes. And for me, I didn't struggle with my weight, so I thought that these hormonal issues were nothing, but actually ended up being PCOS. So it was helpful to see as a clinician the things that people struggled with without bias, but then after getting diagnosed, also being able to expand my awareness for my personal journey and then also better help people as a clinician. So many different perspectives.
Yeah, PCOS affects 1 in 10 women. Both of us here have it. It's very common and it's still so under discussed, I find. So how have you gone about raising awareness and creating a business around a condition while also navigating the challenges of being in such a highly regulated industry?
Yeah, I think the one benefit that I am lucky to have is speed. There are a few women's health platforms that are starting to come up in Canada, I'm noticing, but sometimes you get a little too top heavy, I find, in a business, and then you lose that advantage of speed. So I built it from the bottom up as opposed to the opposite. I've been noticing some of the new women's health platforms coming out have a heavy executive team, big advisory team. They're spending 2 years developing before they finally launch their product. I did the opposite. I started my business as a side hustle, having my own private practice. So just me, myself, would see PCOS patients one-on-one online. And then as my practice started to scale was when I contracted other clinicians and grew the business and eventually went full time. So I bootstrapped from the bottom. My advantage was getting into the market and executing immediately. And my approach is also a little bit different because I'm finding that the larger telehealth companies, they are often more B2B, I guess. They're targeting companies that will cover this for their employees. I did the opposite, went to on the field, in the ground, contacting Facebook groups, talking to my personal network, reaching out to Gen Z on social media who have PCOS, and I built up a community from the bottom up. So I have a decent TikTok following. I have 130,000 followers on TikTok just from sharing PCOS content. I also have what I call a secret group chat of women locally in Toronto who also have hormonal conditions. And my advantage is getting to the market faster and then also being able to talk directly to people who have been affected as opposed to going maybe more the B2B route.
And it sounds like you're a really successful marketer given your TikTok following and the email newsletter that you built up. What advice would you share with founders that are looking to build that community and they've never done it before?
I think earlier when you were talking about analysis paralysis and perfectionism, I think the most important thing is executing. It doesn't matter the quality of your content when you're starting. Just keep doing it and seeing what works. My most practical tip for social media is it is a little bit of like spaghetti on the wall. You can start to see what's going viral in other accounts and try to emulate something similar if you know that these are the types of formats that go viral. But ultimately, you just need to get content out there and see what performs well and then leaning into that. But ultimately, you have to get out of your own head and don't fall into the analysis paralysis.
Definitely. Mental health is also so crucial in managing PCOS, and your approach uniquely blends mental health care with physical health care. So how did you decide to focus on ADHD behaviors and mental health first instead of the more traditional weight loss approach to PCOS? And maybe actually if you could start this question with giving a quick definition of PCOS for anyone that's listening and might be unfamiliar.
Yeah, absolutely. So PCOS stands for polycystic ovary syndrome, and there's a misconception that you have to have polycystic ovaries, as stated in the name, to actually have PCOS. It's a lot deeper than that. So there's a few definitions of PCOS, but I'll give the generalized one. Usually it's what we describe as a hormonal and a metabolic condition. So it's not just that you experience maybe irregular cycles, acne, or what we call the hormonal symptoms. It can also be associated with blood sugars and weight, which is what we call the metabolic. And everyone is different. So some people may have more hormonal than metabolic or vice versa. In general, the average criteria is getting ultrasound and a blood test. The ultrasound will see if you have cysts or not. And then the blood work will tell you if there's any imbalances in your hormones. So a common presentation that we see is having high testosterone, which is often a root cause of acne or hair loss or some of those hormonal PCOS symptoms. And then also the blood work will tell us where your blood sugar or your insulin levels are at. So you'll be able to see if you have insulin resistance, which is more of that metabolic syndrome. Basically, out of all of those things that I stated, you need to have just two out of the three of the cysts, of the irregular cycles, or of those hormonal testosterone symptoms. If you have two out of those three, usually it leads to PCOS. You don't have to have cysts in your ovaries to have it.
Okay, interesting. And then, so going back to how it connects to mental health care, really curious to learn more about your philosophy there.
Yes, I could rant about this forever, but I want to start with, there's a Canadian study that came out 2 or 3 years ago. I believe it was grad students from Ottawa. They were surveying almost 300 Canadian women with PCOS and rating their satisfaction with the care that they received. In this study, the title is quite literally called, quote, "I feel like she didn't take me seriously." And I think that just tells you what you need to know about the gaps in our healthcare. Long story short, some of the results that the survey revealed was up to two thirds of women who got a diagnosis did not receive any kind of treatment around lifestyle, around mental health. They didn't receive any mental health support. And then they also didn't receive any guidance around lifestyle modifications like nutrition or exercise. And in general, outside of this study, it's becoming well documented that PCOS is also associated with many mental health conditions like ADHD, eating disorders, depression, and anxiety. So that was the gap that I saw and realized that no one was doing. So I'm calling it neuro-friendly care. Like you said, I think that the current care available for PCOS right now is very weight-centric. And most women these days getting diagnosed with PCOS are probably a Gen Z. And I think Gen Z want really different things. I think they're kind of tired of that diet culture, diet mentality. And I think some of these larger companies with that weight-centric approach, it's not what us women want. And I can tell you that as a Gen Z woman with PCOS and ADHD. But even if you just zoom out and think about weight loss in general, it's well known, the concept of yo-yo dieting or kind of being on and off. I think fundamentally our approach to healthcare and to nutrition is a little bit backwards. Usually what happens if you want to get nutrition advice is you go to somebody, you kind of get a little bit of a diet plan and you go off. Usually it should be okay, but people are not sticking to it. Why is that? Well, there's more statistics about just adult women that are being late stage diagnosed with ADHD. And so fundamentally, our care and our approach is not friendly to the neurodiverse brain. So what I am trying to do is what I call neuro-friendly hormone care, which is helping people with the nutrition information, but more emphasis on how to actually do it. So folks with PCOS often struggle with stress eating or just feeling disorganized with their meal planning, then a diet plan isn't going to help with that. I help people actually have tools so that they can feel less impulsive around food, they can feel more organized with their eating, and when they are having a low energy, a low mental health day, how can we make sure that we're still consistent with eating? That psychological approach is often missing. Usually when somebody goes to a nutritionist and says they're struggling with cravings, they get told, "Have you tried distracting yourself? Have you tried just eating something healthier?" As someone with ADHD, if you're in the middle of executive dysfunction and you're feeling really impulsive, mindfulness is very hard to do. And it is what I call peak neurotypical advice. And this is very standard in this healthcare system. So long story short, I'm trying to, I think, do what is more helpful for Gen Z women, for women who struggle with ADHD, or even just with emotional regulation in general. I find that there's such a gap in the mental health integration with PCOS care. It's more in a silo right now.
Yeah. And I feel like overall, our healthcare system really lacks more holistic care. So I love that you're taking a more holistic approach overall. I feel like that's always something that I'm seeking when I'm looking for medical care, and it can be really shockingly difficult to find. Mm-hmm. Telehealth has been growing, especially since the pandemic, of course, but in areas like women's health, there's still a lot of untapped potential. I know you talked about a few competitors coming into the space, but I feel like overall, it's still quite undersaturated. So how do you see telehealth shaping the future of healthcare for women? How do you envision the next 5 years in the industry?
Yes, first of all, I think Canada in general for telehealth is getting a little interesting because, I mean, not to bring politics into this, but the whole tariffs conversation and I guess relying on other countries versus sourcing a labor from Canada, there is some conversation around lowering provincial borders for healthcare in general. So this is going to drastically change how we do healthcare in Canada. Right now, any regulated clinician, doctors, dietitians, therapists, we can only practice in the province that we're licensed in. So I can only reach a few provinces right now with July Health, but it seems that very soon the provincial borders might be lowering. So we may be able to bring better access to care in general to people in all rural communities, all provinces, all territories. So even that, I think, is going to increase competition. But that's when it gets really exciting because, in my opinion, the businesses that have effective care are the ones that are going to last. And I'm wondering if maybe some of these more outdated weight-centric types of care models are, I think they're going to die out eventually based on demand. And the demand is pretty clear right now. More women are getting diagnosed with PCOS. More women are also getting diagnosed with ADHD. And I think eventually women are going to choose the clinicians where they feel more understood, they feel less dismissed, and eventually get better results with. And I think this is where telehealth is going to move forward to having more of that integrative, holistic kind of approach. And I'm also hoping in the future that not only is access better, I'm hoping coverage is better. There's been lots of advocacy more in the insurance space to have, for example, weight loss medications be covered for the people who genuinely need it. And then as well as just insurance coverage for allied health in general. It doesn't make sense to me why for many people, including teachers, for example, many of their insurance plans don't cover registered dietitians, but they cover many other things. And if a dietitian were covered, there's a chance that we could reduce some of these diseases before other medications and services would need to be claimed.
Amazing. It's so exciting to hear about those changes in the industry. I had no idea. And then as well, I'm curious, for anyone that hasn't ever used telehealth before and they want to book with July Health, but they don't really know what to expect out of a telehealth experience, could you speak to that?
Yes. The good news is, I guess the age group that is coming to me for PCOS are people who are generally, I guess, more tech proficient. So it isn't anything too tricky, but to be super specific about what the process looks like, myself and many clinicians now offer online booking, which makes it really nice because I think, like many other Gen Z, I get phone anxiety and I don't like to make adult phone calls to book an appointment. So it's actually quite easy. On my social media bios and on our website, I offer online booking, so you can book an appointment right off of my calendar. What happens next is you get a few emails. You just got to fill in a few consent and intake forms so I can get a better idea of your medical history and what you're looking for specifically so I can cater my care to you. The good thing about getting that done is now we save lots of time during the appointment and we can get right to it. What happens next is you just show up to the video appointment. You get an email that has a button for you to log in and join the video call. And then during the call, we're here to guide you through it. So even if you've never worked with a dietitian or a therapist before, the clinician is there to lead you throughout the whole appointment. But it typically looks like a little bit more intake or just gaining a better sense of your preferences for food or your personal needs. And then the rest of the session, you actually get to lean back because usually it looks like some kind of nutrition education where actually your clinician is teaching you more about nutrition. And it's a little bit of collaboration more so than anything else. So let your clinician lead the call. And then afterwards, you receive a summary of our plan, lots of helpful resources and recipes, meal plans, anything that you need to be successful.
Amazing. And you mentioned that July Health currently serves specific provinces. Which ones are those?
Yeah, we're currently in Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, and then the three territories. And my hope is in the next couple of years that we can reach all of the provinces. It either is going to look like us expanding our clinician team and having clinicians that reside in these different provinces. But if these provincial borders get lowered, which hopefully they do, then our current team will be able to see people living anywhere in Canada.
Amazing. Very exciting things on the horizon. And would love to go back to changes in women's health overall. So especially the realm of PCOS and mental health integration. How do you hope that your business can help drive that change?
Yeah, with this idea of neuro-friendly care that we're kind of starting, I'm hoping in the future that clinicians, nutritionists, everyone recognizes that this approach is not working. There's a reason why the diet industry thrives on people falling off of diets. I am hoping that mental health has a bigger consideration in how we approach care in general, helping people actually implement and do the thing rather than just telling people what to do and sending them off. So I'm hoping, and I see it, I see holistic care rising so far, and I'm hoping that we're the leader in specifically ADHD and its relation to hormone conditions. Another thing I hope changes in women's healthcare is hopefully with more education, more advocacy, that primary care providers are more educated on just how many different areas of life PCOS impacts. It doesn't just impact our weight, it impacts our energy levels, our mental health. I'm hoping just with more awareness, maybe from my community or my social media, or just more discussions in general, that primary care providers will also hopefully educate the patient on more different roadmaps of care, because anecdotally, what I'm hearing right now is when people are going to get a diagnosis, they're offered potentially a couple medications that can be very effective for PCOS, but very rarely are they also told you can go this option, but you can also see a dietitian who specialized in PCOS. You also have the option of seeing some of these other people. Often in the beginning, when you get diagnosed, you're not offered some of these other options in general.
Yeah, I would love to see more options being offered, because I know for myself, when I was diagnosed, they basically told me you have PCOS and you can go on birth control if you want. And that was kind of the end of the conversation. So it was really up to me to look into other lifestyle changes and choices I could make and how I could navigate it myself. myself, so would have loved to know about July Health back then.
Wish that more people were educated on this, because often it is just a couple medications or you get sent off, but people don't know that nutrition is actually the primary intervention for PCOS, because it's a condition that doesn't have a cure. Nutrition and lifestyle ultimately is how you manage the condition and try to suppress or manage those symptoms so it doesn't feel like you have PCOS day to day. So it would be nice if some of these options were presented from the beginning.
Are there a couple of quick lifestyle changes that you'd recommend to anyone that has PCOS?
The first one is, I think the trend is dying out now, but intermittent fasting was a thing for a long time. And unfortunately, PCOS girlies cannot intermittent fast, neither can ADHD girlies, because when you have PCOS, often your hunger and fullness cues are not operating the way that they should be. And then when you're on ADHD medications, for example, they're also known to suppress your appetite. So it's very easy for people not to eat all day, call it intermittent fasting, and then we're eating everything in the fridge by the evening. So intermittent fasting is actually not great. I think if you want to start somewhere with your health, it actually is trying to have more structure and a regular eating routine, because if you don't do that, then you're going to get severe highs and lows with your blood sugars, and that's not going to help any of our symptoms. So I actually encourage trying to get food into your system within 2 hours of waking. Understandable if you can't eat something right away, but within 2 hours of waking, and then every 3 to 4 hours after that, trying to get something in so your blood sugars don't crash. Usually that's 3 meals and an afternoon snack for people, depending on how early or how late you sleep. But I would say lay the foundation by actually having some routine and structure, sadly.
Definitely. I never formally did intermittent fasting, but I was bad about just eating sporadically, especially when I'm busy with work. And I listened to a podcast about PCOS, and they were saying, if you ever feel hangry, you're going about your eating schedule completely wrong. And I was thinking like, oh, I'm hangry like 3 times a day. And I've been eating more consistently and have been noticing such a big difference. So yeah, definitely a good piece of advice.
Yay.
Switching gears a little bit, to anyone that's starting out in entrepreneurship or trying to make an impact in healthcare, what's one key lesson from your journey that you think everyone should take to heart?
I think following what I found work for me, boots on the ground. I feel like healthcare or not, entrepreneurs often will build something that they think people want and then launch with that and then realize that their sales aren't where they should be, because usually the biggest gap is they didn't take the time to talk to the people before. So the number one tip I have before doing anything is survey your people, talk to your people. Hopefully, ideally, doing some market survey, market research to see what people want, but also just going out there and talking to people. And then to get extra specific, I learned this tip that changed how I ask questions. If you are surveying people on a market research questionnaire, it's really common to say, if we were to launch this, would you pay for it? And a lot of people will say, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. But then you launch and your sales are like a portion of the people who are actually on your wait list. So I learned this really helpful tip about past behavior being a better determinant of whether someone will buy your product than asking if. So instead of saying, if we launch this telehealth model, would you be a patient? Actually changing that to ask them, what types of services have you paid for in the past for PCOS? Have you paid for a naturopath or a dietitian or a doctor in the past? And that's a better indicator for you of where people are going and how you can create something that people will actually pay for.
I love that piece of advice because, yeah, I think that the way you structure your survey questions can have such a big impact. I feel like sometimes people skew their questions with an overly optimistic kind of tone, and that might make you feel good, but it probably won't make you feel good when your business launches. So I really like that past questioning. And then as well, where can listeners find more information about July Health and connect with you?
Yeah, I am at July Health Clinic on all socials, especially TikTok and Instagram. So just July, like the month, a health clinic. And then our website is julyhealth.com, where you can book online. So if you're in Ontario, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, or the territories, you can book an appointment right now. But if you're not, opt into the newsletter at the bottom of our website, because we're hoping to expand very soon across Canada. And lastly, when you follow our Instagram, in my link in bio, there is a request option for you to join our secret group chat, and we call it our wellness club. So I would love for you to join that too. And I host events and just have nice connection conversations with women who also are struggling with a hormonal condition.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining me today, Julie.
Thank you so much for having me.